Welcome to,
or welcome back to,
Dark Room Reviews. My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
This week's episode is a shift away from the Conjuring universe that we have been covering. We're going to take a look at a movie that we've promised for a while now. This week's episode is on
The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Different from our Conjuring movies,
so let's dive right in.
Well, you might be asking, who are we?
Or you're just an avid listener and you know our lives intimately.
Right. So, I'm Ginger. I'm normally the airline pilot by day and the...
I don't know how long you're going to stick with that narrative for.
Just let me say it.
You have been lying to our audience for over a year now.
It's a year, not over a year.
Over a year.
No, no. We put out this podcast...
April. Oh. Yeah.
Here Happy we are. Anniversary!
Oh, exciting new episode for you guys. And so, this makes our 21st episode.
This does make our 21st episode.
I know.
So, we're a little bit opposite. So, I'm the one who loves the horror movies, always wants to watch the horror movies, usually trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, except for the last couple.
Except for, like, the last five episodes where apparently I am more generous than you.
Yeah, the last couple, like, they really grated on me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just find I'm more of like a middle ground on certain things.
No, they got worse over time for me.
But there are certain things for you that automatically, like, and this is the difference, is I'm more the film tech guy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm more the story person.
So I find I can forgive a storyline for technical, like,
I
without,
usually can't.
Yeah. I can't forgive technical issues or terrible music or terrible scores. We're kind of on par with this episode.
Yeah.
For the most part. Mm-hmm. But in case you didn't know, I did work in Los Angeles working on film, TV, music until I decided to work for an airline. And look where that ended up.
He's not bitter or anything.
No, not at all. It's fine.
Yeah.
How much did I pay for flight training?
A lot.
And I thought being a musician was bad. Anyway, needless to say, we both have things that we do love and hate about movies, and we'd like to share that all with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that means
the great debate lives on.
As mentioned, this week's episode is on the heavily promised for probably about a year now movie, The Autopsy of Jane Doe. So this movie was released in 2016, which I don't know if you can believe that, but it's already 5 years old right now. It was written by Ian Goldberg and Richard Nang. I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but we did research the director's name.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by Andre Ovredal.
Ovredal.
Remember, I messed
it up. Ovredal. It's Norwegian, so we did have to look that up. We're trying to be respectful here.
Trying. I'm very bad at pronunciation. But the actors and actresses in this movie are, it stars Brian Cox as the Tommy, who's the father character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Emil Hirsch as Austin. He's the son of Tommy. Ophelia Lovabond as Emma. That's the girlfriend of Austin in the movie. I put in the note here, GF for girlfriend, not Ginger Fair. It's hilarious. Olwen Catherine Kelly as Jane Doe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because they actually do make a mention even in the movie that this is, you know, featuring Olwen Kelly as Jane Doe. It's interesting because you'd think that maybe she'd be in more things. You know?
No.
She's relatively just primarily a model in Europe. I think it was Ireland and the UK.
Yeah. She's mostly a model. I mean, this is not a talking role for her.
Well, and you can tell that she's a model based by the fact that her entire job of her acting, air quotes, is her being naked on a table.
Being perfectly still.
The whole time.
Yeah. And she does it really well.
Really well. Yeah. So that's kind of that about The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
All right. So if we're going into the story, you know, if you are listeners, if you are avid listeners, or if you're just first-time listeners, we love this movie. I love this movie.
I really like it. Unfortunately, it's one of those movies that I think I could only... I'm losing appreciation for it the more I watch it.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the only thing, is that because now I know, like, the whole shtick with it, I'm like, oh, there, it's kind of... I've seen it.
Yeah.
Not saying that I wouldn't rewatch it.
No.
But I do, like, from rewatching it, I remembered liking it a lot more.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it. Not saying I didn't like it.
And I agree with that, too. It's why I'm trying to mark it based on my first, first opinion of it, which is still very high.
And I think the overall premise and storyline and execution is very well done.
Yeah. But now that we've seen it a number of times, we've showed it to friends, we've made people watch it, we've rewatched it again for the purpose of this podcast. And in doing that, it's forced us to see, like, a few of its flaws. It's not a ton.
Not a ton, but
it has a couple.
It's funny, the same thing happened with Kathleen and the Babadook. Apparently, so many people were asking for, like, reviews, and or she was looking for reviews, and she had to watch, like, the Babadook so many times. She's I hate this movie now.
So I loved the Babadook, but I kept showing it to people.
And now you don't like it?
Don't like it. I'm off of it for a long time. It's probably going to be a little while before I'm recommending that people watch The Babadook.
Yeah.
But it's... haven't seen it, it is a great movie. Yeah. I'll say that.
So getting back into Jane Doe.
Yeah. We open up. It takes place in Grantham, Virginia. The opening scene is the investigation of a crime scene. And essentially what has happened is that there's a nice suburban house. A couple has been murdered, or it looks like violent foul play is at hand.
There's like two people on the main floor. You pan upstairs and there's someone upstairs that's killed. And then they find the body of someone else unknown.
A Jane Doe
in the basement that was kind of covered with dirt.
And this is the outlier, because they find your Jane Doe in literally, imagine your typical unfinished basement, and a giant hole has been dug into the foundation in the ground, and there's just a perfectly preserved young female body in there with no outward signs of like trauma or anything, but she's very obviously dead. And all the people who've been murdered or apparently murdered upstairs have outward signs of foul play.
Yeah.
Like, there's blood splatter, there's gruesome kind of crime scene stuff. And then there's this Jane Doe who's, like, pale skin,
looking
perfect, pristine, just dead, but looking good.
And it's funny because then this kind of leads into the, you know, the mystery of it.
Yeah.
One of the cop now adds in a sign or a little dialogue line here, which is, I don't think someone broke in. It looks like they were trying to get out.
Yeah, to break out, basically.
Yeah.
Which is a cool little fact to remember for the very end of the movie.
Yeah. So what I do like is they set the mood already, and of course they do the typical horror thing where they put you in uncomfortable situations.
Yes.
So you learn that Tommy and Austin, they're kind of like a father-son duo.
Yeah, they're...
And they run... Basically a family morgue.
Yeah, they run a family morgue and slash crematorium.
Yeah.
And this is, you can tell that it is the family business. It's been passed down for generations.
I like the attempt at the side story here where they're sort of like...
I actually like it, so it's not too exposition-y for me. Like, they tell you little bits, but without getting too silly about the exposition.
So that's my dad, Tommy.
Yeah, like it's not like that. No, it's well done, actually.
And you learn that there's, like, a little bit of tension because Austin, you can tell that the mother has died.
You don't know how yet.
You don't know how Austin, the kid, well, kid, adult kid, is supposed to take over the business, but he doesn't want to do the business. He's seeing the girl, Emma, you know, life happens.
He's torn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he feels bad for leaving his dad because his dad wants him to have the business, but he's also like, I don't want to cut open dead people.
But the father's also not putting so much pressure on him too. It's not a situation where you feel like more
like
one
the dad's
way
an
or
asshole.
The other.
Yeah. You kind of are like, I see why they're both kind of in that position.
Yeah. It's actually done really well because, again, they seem like people. I don't like it. I don't like it when movies portray people in ways that aren't
realistic.
Nobody is all evil or all angelic, right? Everybody's a little mix of everything.
Yep.
And I think this writing is what initially drew me into this movie so much. It just seems natural.
And it's interesting because you do get to see kind of the relationship they have. They're working on someone at the time that you're kind of letting into this storyline.
The next scene, it goes right into the morgue. And father and son are working on a guy who died in a fire. And you can tell right away that the father is extremely practical. Like, the son is kind of initially sort of jumping to conclusions. He's like, oh, what killed him? Well, the fire. And the father is like, but calm down, hold on. The flames? Do you mean the heat? Do you mean the smoke inhalation? Figure it out. Don't just jump to conclusions. So he's doing a good job at, like, showing that he's very, like, practical, pragmatic. It's a good scene.
And you can tell that he's very much, like, old man, you don't know what you're talking about, youngster. Like, that's kind of the thing you get, which is important, because you also know, I actually like this scene a bit later, mm-hmm. when the girlfriend comes in.
Yeah.
There's a really bad dad joke, which I think the joke that he plays on her is something I could see my dad doing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because, so, for those of you that don't know, my dad's actually a first responder. He's a firefighter. Mm-hmm. And when you're in those professions that have a lot, like, you see a lot of carnage, you see a lot of dead bodies,
you
see
a lot of parts. You end up having a dark sense of humor.
You have a very dark sense of humor, and it's your way of dealing with it.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
And they do a good job because the dad character, Tommy, he does tell kind of a dark joke at one point, and you're like,
So Austin's trying to protect the girlfriend because they were supposed to go out to a movie. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, Austin's too busy picking up, like, dead people and getting ringed in with his dad. But she comes down and he's like, okay, we got to finish up this case. I'll come up in a minute. And the girlfriend kind of wants to see one of the bodies to kind of see what he does.
Yeah.
You get the idea that the girlfriend knows generally what his job is, but has never actually been shown.
Yeah, she hasn't actually seen anything.
So they go in and it's just the two of them. And she comes in and is like, oh, I want to see one of the bodies. Do you have any here? He's like, no, you don't want to see any of them. And the father comes in and he's like, pick one.
Yeah.
Take a look.
Yeah.
And she picks one and Austin doesn't open that one. He opens a different one. Mm-hmm. Because the one that she originally picked was someone who was shot in the face. Mm-hmm. So he's sans face.
Yeah. He's missing one face.
Yeah. So they show the one body and you get thrown back in. They open the one with the face and there's a bell on the foot.
Yeah.
And, like, the music's ramping up. You know something's going to happen. And I do, like, similar to The Conjuring, where they had a little folklore. This one I actually don't mind because it's, like, again, they just, like, weaved it into the story and it wasn't hitting it over the head with it.
Yeah, it's just one little weave-in of some folklore. It's not, like, and here's this piece of mythology. Oh, and here's this other piece of mythology. How about this third piece of mythology? It's not like that. It's just this one little bit.
And it's very quickly tied in. Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, similarly to the bell on the grave, similar idea, but this was during the plague era that they actually put bells on people's feet to see, just in case you were actually still alive and not just, you know, severely ill, you could move your feet and the bell would ring.
Right.
So this was and you get the impression, you know, I think Emma says something like, well, why do you still do that? And he's like, well, just call me old fashioned.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of his old home thing. So while Emma, the girlfriend, is about to, like, pull off the cloth to see this guy's, like, smashed face, like, blown off face.
Yeah.
The father rings the bell.
Yeah, it's a really good jump scare. Like, it's a good jump scare. It's not too aggressive, it's not too silly, and it's cute. It, like, she jumps back and she's like, oh, ha ha ha, like, she laughs it off, and it's good. Like, it's a good moment.
And the Austin, the son, is like, oh my god, are you fucking serious? Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene, so further to that, then there's kind of a scene between Austin and the girlfriend, Emma, where you get a little bit of exposition, but it's not too bad. I'll sum it up really quickly. Essentially, she is alluding that she wants Austin to leave the family business because they want to move away somewhere. He's obviously gotten into, like, some university, some program, some something. He's doing something else.
Yep.
And he hasn't told his dad yet, and basically they're having a little tiff about that.
And if he wants to do his thing, the father wants him to run the business, yada, yada, yada.
And that's fine. And that's kind of where the scene ends.
Yep.
As the girlfriend is leaving, that's when Jane Doe gets brought into the morgue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, we also have to very quickly mention Stanley the cat.
The cat. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. Stanley is, like, this cat that kind of makes a couple appearances.
Fun fact, the cat who acted this in real life, because, you know, there are cat actors. Its name is Sydney.
Hilarious.
Yes. So, just in case you wanted to know.
Yep. So now we have Jane Doe comes in, mm-hmm. and the police are saying that it's very important. They don't know what this person is. They need to know a cause of death by the morning in order to proceed with the case.
And they're concerned because it's a respected family that the other dead bodies in the house that they found Jane Doe in, it's a very respected family. And so you're getting the impression that the cops are treating this in a sensitive manner because they're like... They're assuming, because you're getting the impression that the cops are like, did this
family commit this murder?
Did they fucking kidnap this girl and commit murder?
Because we need to have evidence of that and proof before we start spreading that rumor.
We don't want that to get out, in, you know, to be sensitive to the family and all that kind of stuff. So that's why they're saying it's a pressing matter. Let's get cause of death first. Let's just figure out what
happened. Yep.
So then the son decides to stay and help his father, Tommy, and they get started on the autopsy.
Yeah, and girlfriend's pissed off because they can't see the movie. I think as they're leaving, mm-hmm. the cop comes in with the body.
And basically he's promises
her... let's catch the midnight movie.
Come back
I'll
later.
Leave. I'm going to leave here at 11. Just... Mm-hmm. We'll see a later movie. I don't want to brush you off, but also...
I got to do this thing.
Last minute work.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to us?
Once or twice.
Thinking that it's 3:54 mm-hmm. on reserve A, ending at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get called. It's always new work.
I miss those days, though.
The 4 a.m. call out, the overnights.
Yeah.
Split shifts.
I mean, yeah, I still miss it.
Yeah.
Like, even the crap. I miss the crap.
I will take...
They'll take any
crap. I would take a Sudbury split right now.
Yo, on that's Minrest garbage. Yeah.
In February.
Oh, oof.
No, that's... Quebec City split.
Oh, that's worse.
They're worse.
Yeah, they're longer. They're hard to deal with. Oh, it's terrible. For a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, let's continue on with the morgue, shall we? So you can tell right away that things are very off. Yeah. With the body.
Yeah.
There are no outward signs of any trauma.
Nope.
The eyes are glossed over. I think they say they're cloudy or gray.
Yeah.
And that's the only kind of oddity that they find.
Yeah. They start with her outside body and they're going through this. They immediately see two things. Her waist is way too small for her frame.
Yep.
Like she's not a big person at all, but even still her waist is abnormally tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So they make note of that. And then they move right on to the shattered wrists and ankles. And from here, Tommy, the father, is saying, you know, I have seen something like this before. There was a human trafficking case that I worked on. Where, you know, the girls were being bound and to be kept silent and all that kind of stuff. And so it's good because that's not the case, by the way.
No. but it's interesting because you're almost trying to uncover the problem
as they're doing it. And it's really good. The way that they lead you down paths is they're not instantly like, oh, it's supernatural. I like that.
Well, and this movie was never advertised necessarily as supernatural or anything
like
that.
No, it's actually advertised as a thriller.
Like a thriller, horror, mystery.
Yeah. And it is more horror, I would say, supernatural than the way that they advertise it. I like that when you get that twist in it. So then they open up her mouth just to start inspecting around her like face cavity and stuff. And they see that her tongue is gone.
Yeah.
And they discover pretty early on that it's not bitten off. And
it was severed.
It was severed off. So that's again playing into Tommy's idea of like, maybe
it is
a human
trafficking.
Yeah,
this is what happened. They would bind them by the wrists and then cut off their tongue so they couldn't talk.
Yeah.
The weird thing, though, this is where it gets a little off-kilter, is they find peat moss, or peat dirt.
That's what it is.
Peat dirt in
her hair.
Hair and underneath her nails.
Yeah, and the gut and the father, so this is a very important clue, follow us with the clues.
And also, if you do want to watch this movie, you can stop right here and just watch the movie, because now we're going to be giving a lot of stuff away.
Yeah, now it's just details. So they find peat, and the son is like, peat? Like, where do you get peat dirt? And the father's like, north.
Like, northeast.
It's not here. It's north.
They're in Virginia.
Yep.
So if you're still Virginia is still a ways away from what would be even the northeast. That would be, like, Massachusetts, Rhode Island at best.
Yep.
Mostly Maine, Vermont, mm-hmm. New Hampshire, that type of area.
He doesn't say northeast there. He just says north.
Yeah.
But it's important to note that he's like, okay, taking note of it.
Yep.
So then he's thinking, okay, she could have been killed somewhere and brought here. That's all he's thinking is a possibility at this point.
Yep.
Then they discover that she has a molar tooth that's missing. Don't worry, they'll find that later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She still has it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And they also find some little fragments of fabric in her mouth and throat, also pretty odd. So they're just kind of like systematically going through all their evidence, and they're taking note of these things.
The one thing I do like about this too is it kind of takes the best of every movie that we've seen. So yes, it does things in the style of like Paranormal Activity, because there are moments where it actually does go through, because they actually videotape the whole autopsy.
Yeah.
And they say like part one, external examination.
Mm-hmm.
All right, step in. And then you go back to the camera. It's like, all right, conducting part two is myself and blah, blah, blah.
It's good.
They also do some point of view stuff, which is very reminiscent of Blair Witch as well.
Yep.
And they also do some, you know, fucky mind twist stuff like Oculus or The Conjuring, where it kind of gets a little
really like
psychological,
messes with, especially Oculus. Like, it really has some Oculus kind of moments.
Yeah,
we'll get to those. There's some really good scenes where it's confusing,
but they take kind of the best of all of them and they kind of make it into the smorgasbord of a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's part of the reason why I like it so much. So at this point, all we know is that the kid doesn't really know yet. He's curious about all this stuff. And the father, he's way more seasoned, performing autopsies. So Tommy is just like, okay, it might be human trafficking. And he just feels sorry for her.
They go along with it. Oh, and of course, they have a really creepy radio that's going on the whole time.
Well, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Well, and now the rain starts kicking in. Because what would be a horror movie without a classic thunderstorm?
You can't have a horror movie without a thunderstorm. But we'll get to the thunderstorm. Hold on. We're not there yet.
Not there yet.
So, next, they're starting to move on to the internal autopsy. And you know what I like about these next scenes? It moves along at a good pace.
Yeah.
It's not too slow.
I never find that there is bad pacing with this movie.
No, it's really well done.
Well, and oddly enough, when the movie ended, I thought there was going to be like a little bit more. I was kind of like anticipating for more, which is actually...
I love it that they held back.
Well, we'll get to that later, but there's actually kind of like, there's a whole thing with this movie as to like, people are dying for a sequel.
Yes.
Pun intended.
Dying for a sequel. It's, they hold a lot back at the ending, and I love that they hold back at the ending.
Well, because
it's wonderful.
The way they do the ending, it really leaves it open for...
Yeah.
It's okay if it ends there, but also there is so much more that could happen.
Yeah, it's wonderful. That's the best way that you want to leave your audience. You want to leave them wanting more, not sitting there going, oh, why, this should have ended an hour ago.
Why,
right?
The Turning?
Everybody knows our feelings on The Turning. Don't watch it. That's my feeling on The Turning.
A year later, we're still trashed on The Turning.
Yes. So, at this point, when they go onto the internal autopsy, this is when they start to have the more paranormal-y things happening. This is the lights flickering, the radio randomly turning to a super creepy song.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, put it in here for you guys so you can hear it.
Mommy told me something a little girl should know. It's all about the devil, and I've learned to hate him so. She said he causes trouble when you let him in the room. He will never, ever leave you if your heart is filled with gloom. So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Smilers never lose.
Yeah, no one wants to hear that.
That's just like
really, it's unsettling.
It's just like horror church music, kind of. Like, you know,
it's not church music. It's just old fashioned. It's really like 50s-ish.
Still, it just is like, you know, when the record player broke and like the guy with the machete is gonna come in and kill you.
Yeah.
Anyways,
it's not good.
It's no bueno.
So, as soon as they cut into her, it's really creepy. A shit ton of blood comes out.
Yeah.
Which, if anybody is up on their autopsy information and their dead bodies...
Or they've just been watching Grey's Anatomy?
Sure. This would not happen. Mm-hmm. This is not a thing that happens. You get a little bit of, like, surface bleeding if it was, like, super fresh. I shouldn't call it fresh, but if the body is really, you know, recently deceased.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was the wrong term.
Fresh.
Fresh. Shit, that's fresh.
We're gonna have to add that clip in here now,
too. Of course, obviously. So that wouldn't happen. And they do make note of that. Like the dad kind of, he's like, I have never seen this. He's like, only once before.
On a fresh and it was body. Like a very fresh corpse. And
but
the
he's like, even then, it's weird. It's strange when it happens.
Yeah.
So then they find a really strange, like almost diseased looking substance on the inside of her skin. Not the full inside of her skin. Yeah. Remember when they start to peel it back and you can just kind of see the thickness of like, you know, you see the layers, you see like skin and a little bit of fat and a little bit of muscle, right?
Yep.
And you can see this like strange black
layer,
almost like a melanoma type of look to it. And that's what the son says. He's like,
what is that?
Melanoma, cancer? Like, what is this? And the dad's like,
it's like very hard.
He's
tissue.
Like, maybe, but it's so widespread. He's like, she wouldn't.
Like, it looks like she's been burned, but also there's no signs of burning on her body.
Her skin is perfect. Her outer skin is like porcelain. Like, it's perfect, perfect.
And then they take some blood from there and they put it in vials to see what they can do for testing.
Yeah.
That's also important.
Yeah. And so then when they take the blood from her body, the son, Austin, he goes to put the stuff in the fridge. Because, I mean, obviously you have to do that. You have to preserve all these samples.
Well,
they're taking
samples because then they're going to send them off to labs to see if there's anything else going on.
Well, he goes over to the fridge and he finds that all of the samples that they had taken from their previous autopsy plus this one are all like leaking blood like crazy.
And like almost burnt. Like you can say things are almost melted and are just falling through the fridge.
And he's like, what the? So he's like, he's kind of like cleaning up and the dad's like, come on. Like, what are you doing? Like the father's just kind of like, hurry up. Like, why are you stalling so much? And he's like,
well, and then they
kind of dealing with a mess over here.
But then they find all the stuff on the organs. Yes. Now this is weird. So now the thing I like about this part is they're taking a very sciencey approach to something.
Love it, yeah.
Which is great because normally in these horror movies, you have to suspend reality here.
Yes.
And so far, you don't have to suspend reality.
And you do at the end. Like, look, there is a supernatural part of it. But up until this point, it's really, like, good.
It's like a horror version of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, it's great.
So you see that there's, like, now they're looking at the organs and they're, like,
really
distressed.
Squished. Yeah. And they're really, like, squished in a way. And so the father is looking at it, and he's like, you know, I have seen this. He's like, this really small waist and this squished organs. He's like, I have seen this with extreme corseting.
Yeah.
And he's like, that is so odd. And the kid makes a comment. He's like, corsets. He's like, didn't those go out of fashion, like, a couple hundred years ago? And he's like, yeah, but, you know,
some people still do it.
Some people still wear them, so
maybe.
It's a possibility. Let's write it down. So they write it down.
Then the weird thing they find next is they find scar tissue.
And the lungs are severely, like, blackened.
And now this is where the mystery starts setting in. Because then they start to mention, like, the only way that someone would have these types of scar tissues on these organs would be from multiple stab wounds.
And serious, serious smoking.
Yeah.
Like,
the
father was like,
and even the guy mentioned, he's like, she could smack a
smoke a pack a day.
What is wrong with me?
I like how that word was.
You could smack a pack a day. This is what happens to my brain, guys.
I speak English.
Sometimes. If you smoked a pack a day for 30 years, you wouldn't have lungs this bad.
It still wouldn't even look like that.
Yeah.
And so then the kid is like, I think he even suggests, he's like, maybe it was a fire. And the father's like, well, yeah, but look at her outer body.
Where would the fire be?
What? He was like, yeah, this could be from a fire, but like, she would have scars.
So
she would
now,
have some,
running through the list of things, and they do have a nice like chalkboard behind that they're kind of like writing down to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. So far you're like, okay, so this person's got shattered, not just broken, completely shattered wrists and ankles. And has clouded over eyes.
Severely corseted waist.
Mm-hmm. Has weird kind of burnt skin layers, really smoke damaged lungs, and scarred organs.
Mm-hmm. And so basically Tommy throws out the idea. He says, okay, what if, he's like, what would this person look like if you hadn't seen her outer skin? And the son's like, oh, she'd be mangled beyond recognition. He's like, okay, let's ignore kind of, the father is trying to say like, almost let's ignore what it looks like on the outside.
Yeah.
And just start solely focusing on what it looks like on the inside.
Because clearly something is not adding up.
Yeah. And that's all he knows at
but
this
then
point.
You get the good jump scare here.
Yes, you get a really good jump scare. And it's Stanley.
It's Stanley. Classic Stanley.
Classic cat move. the cat kind of like gets caught in the what do you call it, in the vents?
In the vents, yeah.
The son goes and finds the cat, and the cat has been injured by something, which is sad.
And while it's like, you can tell that the cat is severely
injured. Yeah. And so then Tommy comes and finds them, and he has to like kill the cat right there. He has to like euthanize it. So it's kind of a sad moment.
And you realize that that was like with the mom too. It's like a sad moment because the father's like, this is the last thing.
He's like, I hated that cat, but that was your mother's cat.
That was your mother's cat.
Yeah.
So it was a sad moment. Mm-hmm. But then we go back to the autopsy room. Just, I think Austin goes because the dad's like, I need a moment here with Stanley.
Yep.
And this is where some of the horror stuff kicks in, which is funny because you would think for it being a horror movie, there'd be more
horror-y things.
But no. I find because it's more psychological, the jump scares get you more.
Yeah.
And they're not cheesy.
No, they're good.
I do have some critiques about the jump scares, and it's actually more about the music.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I didn't ding it down as much, but I know that upon rewatching it this time, you really saw those music flaws.
Yeah.
Like the what do you call it? The sound effect flaws.
The sound effects and just the very
heavy-handed.
It's very on the nose, as I like to call it. It's when there's a jump scare, the music ramps up right up to the jump scare, and it gets you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, there's a jump scare.
And but it works when you don't know it.
Yeah, it works for a couple of them, but then a few of them, you're like, oh, here it is, and there's the jump scare.
Yeah.
Now, does it take away from the movie? For me, on some of the later ones, a little bit, but not that much.
Right.
But I will say, I didn't notice it as much on the first watch as I did on the second watch.
Right. I think this is just because you're watching it over now.
Almost, you know, to critique it.
Like, I think you know what to expect so much now.
Yeah.
So now we're back into the autopsy. They find something really interesting in her stomach.
Yes. So what they do find is they look at the contents and they find what appears to be some type of flower.
Mm-hmm.
And they open her up and they get out what they discover is Jimson weed.
Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know, who aren't on your, like, toxic herbal plants, it's actually a paralyzing agent.
Mm-hmm.
So it is used to actually, like, shut down the nervous system, and basically it paralyzes you so you can't do anything.
Right. Again, it's from the Northeast.
Well, they get more specific, and they say it is specifically from the Northeast region.
And so this is when the father, he's now pretty solidified in, okay, she was killed somewhere else and brought here. So he's pretty confident in that theory.
But they are also confused, too, being like, Jimson weed? Like, that's...
It's weird.
Weird.
It's rare.
Like, we have so many other drugs, and they gave her...
Jimson weed. Yeah. It's odd, but he's like, okay, all right, it's...
It works.
Yeah, it works. It's technically possible. Then they find a really weird thing. So then they find a fabric bundle.
Now, this is where shit really starts to kind of unravel. Like, what the fuck is happening?
I'd say from the point, the first time I watched the movie, from the point of the fabric bundle onwards, I had an idea that it was going in the direction it was going.
Yeah.
And I was fairly confident
that that's
this
what it
point.
Was.
Yeah. Is that around the time that you sort of figured it out, was the fabric bundle?
Around the fabric bundle, because then when it started to get ritualistic,
I was like, then you're okay. It shifts in a direction.
I'm piecing it together.
Right. So this fabric bundle has a tooth in it.
Has a tooth.
Hint,
and it's got...
It's a missing molar.
It's a molar.
And the fabric piece itself is like look like a super old cloth, but they actually call it like a shroud. And it has some this strange ritualistic type of
almost
writing
pentagram-esque circle writing with some, you know, Roman numerals around the outside.
And they're trying to figure it out. And at first glance, the Roman numerals just don't make sense. They're not in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really make any date or time or number. So they
find
just
it out
kind
later.
Of leave it. They set it aside for now, but they take note of it regardless.
Yeah.
The son mentions a really good fact, and I like that they mention this, and the son's like, okay, but this doesn't make any sense. Her stomach acids would have dissolved this.
Yeah. So
and it's
she,
true.
And
her stomach
like,
acid is very strong.
Yeah, and they're like, when did she ingest this to actually not have it dissolve?
Yeah.
So they're really confused as to how long that's been in there, because it couldn't have been long. And they do bring up, is it ritualistic? Is it religious? Is it somewhat like demonic?
Is it human sacrifice? No, he doesn't mention demonic, but he's like, is it human sacrifice region? Because again, like without it being, the father is practical. He's not a supernatural guy. So he's even thinking that, someone could have performed a human sacrifice type of ritual on someone. It doesn't have to be real, but that could be the reason why she died.
But they always keep coming back to the fact, and I do like this, because you're like, what the hell is happening? The father brings up again, but how is this happening to someone that is so pristine on the outside?
Yeah.
Don't worry. You'll find out
how. You'll get to that.
Very shortly.
So just as they're sort of taking, they finish taking a look at this whole thing, they have the strange radio issues again with the creepy song, and then a sports, like a newscaster guy, cuts in and out on the radio saying, one thing is for sure, you're not going anywhere. And yeah. It's just like the timing of it is really well done.
Because they're kind of discussing like, what do we do? Do we just kind of leave it?
Yeah.
This is super messed up.
Yeah, and it's almost like the radio is like responding to them.
Yeah.
It's a neat effect.
It is.
I like it. It's not overused either.
They only do it a couple times where it's a few moments where it kind of kicks in.
So now we get a what the fuck moment.
Yeah.
This is the first part where you're like, okay, some shit's about to go down.
Well, they go back to the body and they start examining that skin layer thing again on what they've kind of peeled back her outer skin. And they realize that it actually, there's an outer layer of skin that is able to be separated from
an inner layer of skin. Yeah. Now follow us on that, because I know that's not how the body works.
Yeah.
And this is where it starts to take a big deviation from
reality.
But it's almost like she has this outer layer of skin.
Sorry, I wanted to announce to everyone that was any of those like rustling sounds was George running to his food, because apparently we starve him.
Yeah. You know, he's so neglected, quote unquote.
He gets fed twice a day.
Oh, he's so chonky, you guys. He is, he's a chonk master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, George makes it into one of our episodes every time.
Oh, God, you might be able to hear him slurping right now. Yeah, if you can hear that, that's him slurping up his food.
Wet food specifically.
Yeah, oh, of course.
All right, back to dead corpses and their weird outer skin layers.
So it's almost as if, imagine like she has this outer layer of skin that is absolutely perfect, but it's covering up all this trauma underneath.
Yeah.
And when they peel back this outer layer, they see this almost like an inner layer of skin where they can see burns, cuts, like scar tissue, ritualistic writing.
Well, and like, the markings are on the inside of the outer layer
of skin. And it's, you're like, what? The fuck?
How the hell? That's some special tattoo technology. You're
like, I don't even understand that one. Then the lights explode, and now we're in the dark with the dead bodies.
Yeah.
So good times.
Good times. Fun. Right. Exciting. And what I like about this is now we're getting into some POV type of stuff, because it's pitch black. It's kind of like back and forth. You don't
know
what's going to happen.
Between the father and the son. It's really good.
And I really like this part, because you don't know where it's going to go. All you know is that it's been creepy with the body there.
Yes.
Something weird has happened before it even got to these people.
Yeah.
And now shit's really hitting the fan and you can't see anything. Like it's like POV. He's got a flashlight. I think a cell phone light or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man. Again, you're more terrified about what you can't see from what you can see.
Absolutely.
And this movie does a good job of that, of like making you afraid of things that you think are there that may or may not necessarily be there.
Yeah. So they decide to get the fuck out.
This is probably the best decision they've had the whole time. Yeah. Like, and arguably, I'm not saying if I was in this situation, because I wouldn't have that job.
No.
But if that was the information that was presented to me, where like I could arguably see scientifically, this is... This could be explained, this could be explained, this could be explained. This is a little weird, but yeah, I could see that. And as soon as it kind of got to that point, I was like, this is fucking messed. Yeah. I don't know what the hell this is.
When you start to really cross the line, that's when they decide, you know what, let's just get out of here. And I say, hey, look at that. Smart people in a horror movie. I like it.
Yep.
So they get it in their head that they're going to now try to escape. However, there's some issues with that. Because
the power is out,
the elevator doesn't work, and they're in the basement. For anybody who doesn't know, morgues are typically in a basement at a crematorium type of home. That's very typical, so it's not even unusual. I like that it's not a horror movie trope. That just is how it is if you have a morgue. So the elevator is busted, so they decide to not even try it. They skip right to, they have these sort of bigger cellar doors, and that's obviously for lowering bodies and certain things, probably equipment and things, into the morgue area.
Yeah.
So they go right to the cellar doors, but unfortunately, they're blocked probably by what you assume to be a down tree or something like that. There's a pretty good storm going on outside.
Yeah. So then they can kind of see what's going on. They try to call for help. mm-hmm. and they run into an office.
Yeah, they go into the dad's office, it looks
and
like.
And they try to call for help, but all the phone lines are down, things are kind of going on. Oh, I missed one of the parts earlier, because this is also important.
Yeah.
The dad cuts himself.
Yes, the dad cuts himself.
So in either one of the organ removals or earlier on when they open the body up, he mm-hmm. actually cut his hand or his wrist or something.
Yeah, he cut something.
And now you can see, because this is now the first time that you're seeing he's actually having some pain mm-hmm. or some type of like issue with the bleeding. Because you can see that like, in certain scenes that the bleeding hasn't stopped.
Yeah, it's pretty like aggressive.
And you're like, oh man, this ain't good.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think the dad's dealing with that because he ends up going to the like the shower.
There's like a little bathroom off of his office.
Yeah, so and he's, like, the son's trying to figure out what's going on, and they have, what is it? I think they have that big jump scare with the someone knocking on the door.
Well, so they can hear the bell ringing. So that's now this is where you come back to the part where, if you guys remember, the earliest scene, the body with the blown-in face and the bell around its ankle. So now you can hear a shuffling and a bell ringing, like, every time a person would take a step. It's good. Like, I think the timing of it is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear the bell rings get louder and louder and louder. And then you get a really good jump scare where all the lights go out in the office and the dad is attacked in the bathroom.
In the bathroom, yeah.
And all you can see are the gray eyes.
Yeah.
And so then when he comes out, he says it. He was like, they're her eyes.
Yeah.
I swear, like, they were her eyes.
And he's the only one that got attacked. Yeah.
Yep. And that's another thing that you have to note. The mm-hmm. dad is the only one who gets attacked in this until a point.
Until later.
Yeah. It's interesting because we have a theory on why that is. Mm-hmm. So now, oh yes, when they leave the office,
so
remember
now
they see
yeah.
the sheet that was covering up that guy's face.
So now, so what they're doing is they basically have decided that they need, the son goes to help the dad and yeah. they've barricaded themselves in the office, so they think.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need to get out of here.
Yeah.
I think there's a point where, oh, that's later.
Mm-hmm.
They go back into the office.
No, they just go back into the autopsy room after this event because they're kind of stuck down there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And now they find out when they go back in the autopsy room that everything, every sample and every bit and organ that they've taken out of her body is severely decomposed.
Not like, you know, oh, we left it out for a couple hours.
No,
like,
it's soup.
It's soup now.
Yeah, it's rotting.
It's organ soup.
It's rotting organ soup. And they're just like, what the hell? Yeah. They're like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just not possible. Then this is the scene where they get stuck in the autopsy room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you get another good, you get some jump scares in this one, and you get the son basically saying, like, fuck it, and he takes an axe to the door.
Takes an axe to the door, and he decides that we're done, we can't find a cause of death, we just need to light her body on fire, because mm-hmm. she's causing it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So they
get lighter fluid or something. Don't they get like
yep.
some type of...
They either something that they use to start...
Some type of flammable liquid.
Yep. And they douse it all over the body, and he's like, I don't care what it is. She's causing it. You basically have come to the conclusion at this point
right.
that this body, this Jane Doe body, is responsible for all this in some capacity.
Yeah.
You don't know how.
It's not logical. And they're fighting about it. Like, they know that it's not logical and it doesn't make any sense, but here they are.
Yep.
Right? So they literally light her body on fire,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, the fire goes from her body, and it erupts
all
to
the ceiling, yep.
and it's instantly all over the ceiling, and that's when they know, they're like, oh, no, we can't leave her on fire. She's doing this, like,
yep.
somehow.
And so they have to extinguish it, or else they mm-hmm. get burned to death.
And as soon as they extinguish it, all the fire goes out everywhere, and it's as if there was no damage.
Yeah. So now they take the axe out of the door because they're like, okay, well, mm-hmm. we need to basically get out.
Yeah.
But who do they hear in the hallway?
Belfoot.
Bellfoot. Bellhop. Bad joke. What's a hotel? I don't know. So they, now that the power's kind of back on, you can tell that the power is like either backup power or something mm-hmm. is on. They try to go for the elevator once again.
Yeah.
So they're trying to call the elevator. They took the axe with them, which, mm-hmm. you know,
smart move. Good move. Approve.
There is a good jump scare too, where as they're hammering to get out, because I think they got trapped, even though they took it out, they had to hammer out.
Mm-hmm.
You get the jump scare of the face of another body.
Yeah, it's good.
That was in one of the wall morgue.
Yeah,
cellar
in the little
things.
Drawer things.
Yeah.
yeah, body drawers.
Body drawers. Yeah, those things.
Yeah.
So they do try to make an escape for it now,
mm-hmm.
and they run to the elevator, and you can hear it. They have this cool, like, convex mirror.
Yeah.
That is...
It's like a security mirror.
A security mirror to kind of look through corners.
Mm-hmm.
And they use that to their advantage for the movie, of course.
Of course.
Because you can see things very poorly in the mirror kind of coming towards them.
Of course.
So they get into the elevator, and...
You can hear a bell guy
coming. Yeah. And they just as soon as they get into the elevator... The power cuts out again.
And they're struggling to get it going again, and they're struggling to get the elevator door shut, and they're you know, the music is really mounting nicely, like, it's a good, like, scary scene.
The problem that I have is, like, yes, the music mounts nicely, and it is a bit of a fake-out here a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's still a jump scare at the end of the day. Like, it wasn't...
Like, I don't find it to be a jump scare. I don't think it is.
No, but I just they treat it all the same way. That's why I don't care about it.
I guess music-wise they treat it as a jump scare, but it's not really a jump scare. Because you know not. He's coming. You're waiting for him to attack them. You're waiting for Bell Guy to, like, descend upon them.
I know, right? But I mean, the moment still happened. So here's the thing, though. Yeah. Again, if you guys want to still be scared by this, don't listen to us and just watch the movie at this point.
Yeah.
If you haven't started watching it already.
We haven't even really revealed a thing, but now we're revealing stuff.
This is a big spoiler. So as the doors open up, they're like, okay, I'm going to open it up. And if I see something, I'm going to get this guy.
And the dad sees Bell Guy's corpse. And he
takes the axe from right to the chest.
And axes this guy right in the chest.
Is it a guy?
No, it is not.
You hear some labored breathing, but it's not the same
voice
that you heard earlier.
It's definitely a female's voice now.
And you pan over and you see that it's the girlfriend.
Yeah. So the dad has just mistaken the girlfriend through whatever trickery or whatever has happened here. And he has killed the son's girlfriend. Perfect.
Because you can see there's also another scene just prior to this, before shit starts hitting the fan, where the clocks actually are stuck. I don't know if you noticed that. They're all stuck at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
They all get stuck at 10 because he keeps checking the clock. They're always at 10 because he claimed that he was going to be going to the movies and leaving at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can imagine what's happened is, for whatever reason, the clocks have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
He missed the time. The girlfriend came back to see what was going on, and she gets an axe to the chest. Fun times. So that's a good scare. That's very ode to Oculus, as, like, you don't know what you're seeing is actually what is happening.
The son starts losing it when he sees who it is actually on the ground. The dad pulls the son into the elevator, and basically they don't even make it up to the main floor. The power cuts out before they can even do that. But they have, like, a sad but nice moment in the elevator. You can tell the father is devastated by what he's just done. He's not this horrible person.
No.
But he really, truly thought that it was this dead body that was after them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Like, he was trying to help.
There was a bit of a makeup session there. Mm-hmm. Not really a makeup, but sort of, like, you kind of get let in a little bit on the mother's, like, mental health capacities.
So, you get let in on a little bit of the backstory. She apparently had a mental illness, and she had actually committed suicide. That's how she died. And, you know, they're having a nice moment where they're like, it's okay to forgive yourself. Like, it's, you know, you couldn't have saved her, and that's
there's nothing you could have done.
Yeah.
So now, of course, in true horror fashion, the incinerator, not only incinerator, the like the cremation oven, whatever you call
incinerator,
it.
Incinerator, I think it is.
Do they still call it incinerator?
Yeah, I think so. The thing that
cremates bodies.
Yeah.
That just starts turning on and gets ramped up to like 4,000.
So now there's smoke just like billowing in the hallways and you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to figure out what's going on. The son now suspects that Jane Doe is like stopping them from hurting her.
Yes.
And they need, so eventually now we're back on the tangent of, we need to figure out how she died to kind of know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, we've mentioned that technically up until this point, the only person that's really been formally injured is the father. The son hasn't been physically hurt, except for the fact, like, mentally, that now he knows his girlfriend's dead. Mm-hmm. And the mental trauma, if you want to call that. So now they're trying to figure out what's been going on, and they decide to just, like, fuck it, we need to finish the autopsy and figure out what's going on. So now they go to the brain, and they take off a slice of the brain, and they look at it under a microscope, and you find that, for whatever reason, the cells are still alive from what they can tell under the microscope. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
She's what alive. She's yeah. what? Insert plot twist here. And now what you end up finding out is they're trying to look through all their other evidence to see what's going on. And they go back to this cloth that was on the little, like, light
pad thing. Yep, that little, like, shroud cloth that had the weird ritualistic writing on it.
It was folded over a certain way that now, when it was folded, you could see that all these Roman numerals lined up.
Yeah, they're making more sense. They're a date now. Now you can see that they're a date and they're something else, too.
They ended up finding out that it's spelled out in Roman numerals. Leviticus 27 mm-hmm. was kind of what they deducted from these Roman numerals.
Mm-hmm.
And they find out, this is where, if you haven't clued it up already, this is where you get... I do like this one because it could be... I don't find this one as hitting it on the head,
yeah.
hitting the hammer on the nail type of thing.
Yep.
Because there's so much disconnect that, like, yes, you... I was thinking it before this, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you were. But I like that they actually formally said it in this case because you find out that Leviticus 27 is a passage about witches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which then when that happens, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. Northeast, 16, like, didn't those go out of style a few hundred years ago? And you're like, oh, okay, the corset, something like that is kind of unraveling itself.
So they figure out, if you haven't figured this out yet, they're now thinking witchcraft.
Yeah.
And they're not really thinking witchcraft because, of course, keep in mind, the father is
the
still
father is
very,
still actually denying it.
He's still very practical. And he's like, yeah. But, so he's like, okay, Salem witches weren't a thing. He was like, it was group hysteria, it was all kinds of things, but it wasn't witches. Yeah. Like, that's not a thing. Mm-hmm. It was never that. It was always other stuff. And so, but they have a little theory.
They kind of do a reverse psychology. Theory. They're like,
yeah.
Okay, maybe they weren't any witches, but did this ritual create one?
Yes. So their running theory, which is never really confirmed, but this is what they kind of theorize with each other, that the ritual that they performed on this girl, Jane Doe,
accidentally
created
a witch.
A witch. She's so angry and vengeful that she now kills anything within a certain radius of her.
Yeah. And
more so if they try to hurt her or dig her up or anything.
Yeah, and this also ties into what they said earlier is that they think that she can feel what's happening
mm-hmm.
because she's not
fully
dead. She's
yeah.
still somewhat
almost
alive.
Almost like an undead sort of situation.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah.
So now we find out that the dad kind of has figured out what's going on, at least
yeah.
in his mind.
Yeah.
Maybe
this
because
is her
he
revenge.
Cut himself.
Yeah.
Maybe he has this weird connection with her.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially...
I think it's because he's the one actually... My theory is it's because he's the one actually doing the cutting. He's actually physically hurting her. That's why she attacks
Well, but the son
her
does
him.
The head.
And that's why she eventually gets him, too.
Yeah, I guess.
Keep in mind, right? She eventually...
I thought it was all more
no, well,
like, linked to the
no,
cut that he got.
No, because he smashes his head when he falls
at
the
end. I know.
No, I think... I really honestly think that it's very, like, tit for tat with her.
Hmm. Anything they did to that her...
She'll do
them.
Back to him. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Because she doesn't attack the son.
Until the very end, until he
yeah.
cut up in the head. Yeah.
Whereas she's only going after the father for a good period of time.
Yeah.
So the father figures this out, that this is her revenge. So now the father kind of makes this random deal with her. He looks at her and he's like...
Well, and he's assuming, so you kind of get the idea that he thinks that the way to beat this is to give her what she wants, which is essentially her revenge and... essentially inflicting, you can almost get the idea that she almost is still alive
mm-hmm.
from what has been done to other people. Like,
yeah.
basically, if she can inflict the same thing that was inflicted to her, she'll mm-hmm. kind of stay alive.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if someone cut her, she'll cut them back, and it mm-hmm. kind of, like, is off of her again.
Yeah.
So he kind of says, I'll give you what you want, but don't hurt my son.
Yeah. So she takes this deal... Because pretty much right away, you see the father starting to experience all this crazy, crazy trauma.
So, but here's the thing that I think is a bit different, is it's not necessarily a one-to-one because he didn't break the ankles. They're already broken when she got there.
No, I know. I think she's just doing to other people what they have done to her.
Yeah.
But I think it's only really instigated if you hurt her, right?
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think it's a radius thing. But what's interesting is that then there's a new layer. So when the father starts getting hurt, like seemingly by her after they make this deal, she starts to restore almost.
Yeah, she almost like rejuvenates herself. You can see that her organs are scars are going away.
Yep.
His wrists are getting shattered, but you can see the bones are getting back into
her
place.
Her eyes are clear now. They're not mm-hmm. cloudy anymore. She has like less damage on the inside. But the son is watching his dad suffer, and he doesn't know why. Because he doesn't know that the dad has just made this silent deal with her, right?
So I think that what's happened is the son is like seeing all these things happening to her, and he doesn't know why, and he's almost going to put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
So he takes a scalpel or knife or something mm-hmm. and kills the dad.
Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't want to see his dad suffer.
He doesn't want to see his dad suffer that way, and he doesn't know why it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, but unfortunately, by killing the dad, the ritual, whatever you want to call it, wasn't complete.
She's pissed now.
She's super hella pissed.
Oh, yeah. So,
But you think, so this is the one thing I do like.
You think that it's over.
You think that it's over, because the lights come back on, the radio's on, and you hear that, like, there's, like, someone banging on the cellar doors.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, it's the cops.
Are there. And he's like...
Yeah.
Just open up the door now.
It's stuck.
Try again, son.
I can't. It won't.
It should open up now.
It won't
open up.
No, I'm trying. It's stuck.
Open up.
I can't.
Open up.
I can't.
Open up your heart and let the sun shine in. So let the sun shine.
And then he sees,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's his dad, right? He gets shocked by like the image of his dad.
Yeah.
And he basically backs up almost Hill House style.
Yeah.
Back through the railing and falls on his head and dies.
And, like, smashes his head and dies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and now everyone is now dead in the morgue.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's the next day. It's morning now. And the police come in because they're expecting a cause of death, right? Yep. So, they come in. They find the father and son dead. And, again, similar to how they found the couple in the house.
They almost do the same investigation technique where they come in and you can see that they're taking pictures and they're like, fuck.
And it looks like
the same thing.
It looks like Austin has killed his dad.
Yep.
And they're like, and again, the police officer's like, I know this family.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, there is no way that this son would have killed his dad in some crazy rage. Like, I just cannot believe that to be true.
Yeah.
So then the cop, you can tell that the cop is now starting to suspect that it's this body. It's this Jane Doe body. And he doesn't like it.
Hates it. And the other cop is like, well, what do you want to do with Jane Doe? And he's like,
get it out of here.
Get it out of my county.
I don't want to
hear
anymore.
What's
really cool about this is there's a fun little side fact that I actually didn't pick up. I picked up not on the first time, maybe like a second or third time watching it. But in the background, you can hear the radio is on now. And they say like, fourth sunny day in a row, great weather again. And you're like, wait a second.
Fourth sunny day. It's been raining, thunderstorming this whole time this movie's been going
and
on.
That's when you realize that actually none of that was true.
None of the
thunderstorm stuff.
Everything that you thought happened during the autopsy probably didn't happen.
Was a figment created by Jane Doe to keep them there. So it's interesting. Then you get what I think is like chef's kiss, mwah, like a perfect ending.
So now they pulled the bodies out of all the normal humans, and now they have Jane Doe's body goes into a separate van.
Yeah, they're transferring her to a different place.
And now this guy is driving by himself, and he's like on the phone or something, and I'm like, oh no, he's next.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I thought personally.
Yeah.
But what happens is the radio starts getting fucky.
Mm-hmm.
That same song comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, when's it gonna happen?
And it does this really cool shot where it pans from her head all the way down, full length of her body, and then down to her feet in a really neat, like, almost like, almost as if it's like a drone shot. Like, it looks
really
cool.
Yeah, they do like a direct overhead of her body. Yeah. So it starts facing forward on the van and then it lifts up so you're looking straight down and it scans the whole body.
Yeah.
And goes back to being horizontal by her feet. And you can see that there is now a bell on her foot, on her toes.
No, there's no bell. There's a tag.
Oh, it's a tag. Sorry, I thought it was a bell.
No. She has a tag on her toe, but the really cool part of it is that right in the very last second, and you're waiting, they leave it there uncomfortably long because you're like, is she going to fucking pop up and kill this guy? Like, what's about to happen here?
Yeah.
oh no, her big toe wiggles a little bit. Just
like, and they use the bell sound effect there.
Yeah, and yeah. then that's it. It's
that's the end of the movie.
End of the movie. It's a great ending.
So I like the ending because it actually leaves it open for a sequel, because Jane Doe is now, I think they mentioned that the body's going to DC, they're taking it to the Fed, something like that. So you're like, okay, there could be something else that's happened with the body because it's going somewhere else. They never actually got rid of the problem.
No.
Which is interesting. But I also think, like, they've kind of wrapped up their whole story as well.
Yeah,
or like, the family's dead. It's killed. Right.
Or they'll never do a sequel, and it's just perfect the way it is. Like, this movie could go either way for me. You could either make a sequel, and it could be really good, or it could be shit because they'll do too much with it.
That's the fear. And I hope they do a sequel. It'll be in a similar style, or even potentially different points of view.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of interesting. Similar to, like, Oculus, where people are seeing different things.
That'd be really cool.
Be really cool. But rumors only for now. We don't know if that's going to be in the works.
Yeah.
I think ultimately my only critique is somewhat on the technical side, where the music's just too on the head with certain things. Like, it's very much like, oh, it's anxiety. We need to build it up. And boom, it lands right where you want it to land. And you're like, sometimes you just need to build tension
without that.
And sometimes you need to do that elsewhere. Mm. I find if you can be a bit more creative with where you're landing, it can be a bit more effective.
That's
not
fair.
Saying that it wasn't a bad movie. This movie was very much effective, and I would rewatch it again. I think the pacing is great because the way they kind of present everything, you don't really start getting into shit till about halfway through the movie, and it doesn't feel like you've waited that long.
No.
And it's a relatively short movie. I think it's only like an hour and a half.
Hour and a half. That's it. It's like 90.
It's a very easy watch.
Yeah.
So if you are looking for something kind of quick and makes you think a little bit, not too much, but like is got a lot of stuff packed into it.
Yeah.
It's good, especially for having a small cast. I was a little concerned with the small cast when you first recommended it to me, because I don't know if anyone else has seen this. I can't remember what the name of the movie's called. I think it's called Buried or something like that. But it's basically one of the Ryans. I can't remember if it's Reynolds or the other one, Gosling. I think it's Ryan Reynolds.
I think it's Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds trapped in a box for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's just him. They're the only actor. He's the only actor they paid.
That was where the whole budget
went. That was the whole budget. And it did different things not as well. But I was concerned with the smaller cast that that's what it was going to be. It was like, oh, it's going to be three people locked in a room with creepy sounds.
Yeah. No,
but
it wasn't
not.
That at
but
all.
But it wasn't that. They actually got a little bit more developed, which I was pleasantly surprised about.
Yeah, it was good. I like that they didn't use corny shit. Like, I like that
it had a pretty decent storyline. You didn't know where it was going to go. There was some psychological buildup, some actual horror scenes. It was like haunting meets ritual meets murder mystery almost.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's good. I liked it.
Yeah.
So should we get into our scores?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So as you know, we do give a score out of 100 for the movies. We do try to give up, you know, approximately 20 points per category. We do mark it on the overall story, the acting, any visual effects, the music and sound effects, and the movie ending satisfaction rate. So what did you land on for this one?
I gave this one 90 out of 100.
Okay.
I scored it very high.
So we're going back to our traditional routine, huh?
Yeah. And the only reason I dinged it down ever so slightly was just like what you said. It's those couple of technical things. But for me, it does hit all of the acting points, all of the storytelling points. The ending is wonderful for me. It doesn't show too much. It's not silly.
Yeah.
And it's still creepy. Like, it's got a neat concept. And I also like that it's pretty different.
Yeah,
like,
it's a very different style.
Like, yes, it's supernatural. And yeah, that's been done. But, like, I can't think of another movie where it's been a Salem witch that wasn't really a witch that got turned into a witch. Like, that's kind of neat. It's
yeah, and was only found by a weird murder that you now know kind of what happened.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah, that's true. I went a little lower. I went down at an 85.
I think it's pretty fair still.
So the only reason I brought it down a few more points was the acting was good. I do think that it was not the best acting I've seen. I think it just kind of fell to the fact that ultimately, it's two actors.
Okay, so for me, I have no problem with the two actors. I think they're great. I think they have a real father-son feel. I don't love the girlfriend,
yeah.
But I'll cut her some. She's in like two scenes.
Yeah.
So who cares?
I know. I think the bulk of the movie is great, but I feel like it just wasn't a 100% performance. Like, unfortunately, we have things like The Woman in Black that we saw that theater production in London.
Oh, yeah, that was phenomenal.
Where you had two outstanding, well, three. two outstanding actors.
Yeah.
One is...
Oh, we're not talking about the movie, by the way, because that's not that good.
We got to see a stage production in London, England, of The Woman in Black.
Yeah, which is where it actually originated. So for anybody who's seen the movie The Woman in Black, I don't mind it. I think it's a good movie. I think it has its place. It's a little cheesy, but it's got its place in your horror movie lineup.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite, but it's certainly not my most hated. It's not The Turning. But we saw the stage play, which is the original thing that it was based on in London.
And it's kind of like a story within a story, but it's only told by two actors.
Yeah, and you're thinking two actors on stage for like...
And it's long. It's like 3 hours.
For like 3 hours, you're like, this is going to be terrible. It is very scary. I can honestly say I have not really ever been scared watching a play, and it was so good.
And that's, I think, unfortunately, like, that's the level I... want to equate it to, which it just doesn't reach that for
me. No, it's not quite that level, but I still give it a 90. It's a movie. I give it a 90.
And I just dinged it down a little bit for the music. As I mentioned, like, just some of those things were just hit a little bit too hard on the nose.
Mm.
And it's just like, you can be a little more creative with it than just like, ooh, it's dark and ominous. It's like, forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
Dark and ominous. All I want is dark and ominous.
Yeah. Bong. Bong.
Okay, that clip.
Yeah.
But... that's kind of how I felt about it, was that just those other things, but the storyline's great. I like the twists, like the psychological twist in it.
I love the psychological
and kind
twist.
Of how it all pieces together. It's got like a
and
little bit
ending,
of...
ending. It's so good.
It's a good
it's
ending.
It's very like original Blair Witch style, where you don't see anything, but it gave you a little something with the toe wiggle, but that's it, right?
Yeah.
Just a
and
little...
And this horror of this like dead body has... And all she's doing is laying there. The whole movie.
Oh, it's so good. Like... she literally just lays on the slab. Like, that is it.
That's it.
And yet, it's so well done. So, that kind of wraps it up. I mean, obviously, if you've made it this far, you've already seen the movie, because we told you there would be spoilers and stuff, but...
but, if you did think the same things as us,
mm-hmm.
great. Let us know what you think somehow.
Let us know.
If you can reach out to us. But, if not, we are going to continue with another episode, a newer movie this time around.
Yes,
we figure we will get back to our finale of The Conjuring universe, but we like, do want to wait till it's closer to the new movie release date.
And they still say that the release date is going to be June. We'll see how that goes. The pandemic has sort of been changing release dates on us.
So do stay tuned so you can figure out when we're going to be doing our Conjuring universe reveal. But in the meantime, we're going to go with a newer horror movie.
It's very pandemic appropriate.
It's very pandemic-esque. And it's going to be Host. So it's kind of a Zoom meeting meets horror.
It's a Zoom meeting meets seance. And I have to say, if that was ever suggested to me, it'd be a hell fucking no. I have already said this. We talked about this one a little bit in our Gas or Pass episode. I loved the movie. I thought it was really good. And we'll get into why it's so awesome. But like, if I was alone in my house during COVID, like alone, not like with you and I live together, but like fully alone, I would not be okay with that as a concept. Be like, hey, you want to just not sleep for the night? Even when you know it's not real, you know that your mind, your overactive imagination is going to be playing tricks on you.
Can't give it away too much for the audience. They got to still listen to our review.
I know.
But if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can check out our next episode. So, thanks again so much for joining us here at
Dark Room Reviews.